Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another Lights On listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse Baptist Church in Santa Maria, California. And your brain masseur, get ready for your brain massage. Another look at the Convention of States approach to address our problems with the federal government. And there are many. Federal government has become the King George of our generation, and the tensions between government overreach and oppression and the liberties of Americans has risen close to the boiling point. Will we be pushed into a second armed revolution for our rights? Or did the genius of our founders provide a way to make the corrections necessary to bring government back under the people in Article 5? But first, an important and related issue. The effort to use transgenderism to complete Obama's call to fundamentally transform America. Beginning, remember, with his declaration that America is no longer a Christian nation. Long and meaningful pause. At least not just. With his own railroading into law, Obamacare, which had as its primary purpose or goal to provide government-subsidized health care for the homosexual community who were being barred from coverage on the ground of their risky behavior and pre-existing conditions. My friends, one of the most important brain massage episodes is about to blow your mind wide open to truth. It's time for your brain massage.
Truth, served here, flavored by delectable wit, delicious sarcasm, succulent sagacity, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Currently, the LGBTQ plus community has practically taken over our schools, and it appears they have conquered the natural prejudice against their unnatural behavior. Their counter-nature ideology has, it seems, prevailed over man's instinctive resistance to their blatant contradiction against nature and their rebellion against nature's God. But this is an illusion carefully crafted by a small minority of very wicked and satanically inspired people, instigated by the radicalized among the so-called gay community. Not all who practice homosexuality agree with the gay agenda, by the way. It's a mixed bag of homosexuals. And by the way, I get into issues with some of my dearest friends who chastise me for using this word, homosexual, instead of what they consider to be the biblical word, sodomy. So let me address that briefly, and it also offers some clarification. First, in fact, the Bible does not use the words sodomite or sodomy. We derive these words from the account in Genesis 18, where the men of a city called Sodom demanded to know Lot's male visitors. And you know what I mean by no in the biblical sense. But in case you don't, these men of Sodom were demanding Lot deliver his male guests to them so they could use them sexually. So we call this behavior sodomy, and those who practice it, sodomites. Over time, it came to refer to one specific sexual act where a man uses another man in a manner the Creator designed for a man and a woman to come together. So we call this behavior sodomy. Not all homosexual behaviors are limited to that one act. Biblically, it is a sin for a man to lay with a man in the manner prescribed by our Creator for a man to lay with a woman. Leviticus 20, verse 13 says, quote, if a man also lie with mankind, as he lieth with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination, end quote. Now, for those who object that I left off the penalty prescribed here, that both of these men should then be put to death under the law, I would remind you that Jesus did not cast stones at the woman taken in adultery, although Moses' law required that penalty, and that nowhere in the New Testament are we given such instruction. Instead, if they are brothers, we remove them from our fellowship and turn them over to Satan for the destruction of their flesh. 1 Corinthians 5:5. Yeah, that's in the Bible. If they are among the lost, we declare the gospel to them, warn them of the judgment to come, and leave their temporal judgment to God. This temporal judgment is declared in Romans 1 verse 27. Quote, "And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error which was meet." And the word meet here means fitting or appropriate. In context, we learn that God declares this condemned behavior is practiced also by women. Of course, they don't commit sodomy, do they? In the way we now understand that word. But they do change the natural use, quote, "they change the natural use into that which is against nature," end quote. Now that's verse 26 of Romans 1. The next verse, the one I quoted a moment ago, where it talks about men with men working what is unseemly, and for this, receiving in them, that is in their bodies, the divinely appointed fitting recompense for their error. That is, the recompense was fitted to the behavior. And that verse begins, "And likewise also the men." In other words, what these men and women do is unnatural. It's a departure from the natural use. It is contrary to the divine design of the Creator. So the behavior we're talking about is biblically referred to as men with men and women with women, which is homo, same sex gender attraction. The word homosexuality means same sex relations, and that covers it all. Whereas the words sodomy and sodomite today are restricted to a specific behavior that occurs between men only anyway. Years ago, after some deep research into the movement launched by the raid of a popular same-sex bar in Greenwich Village in New York in 1969, it was called the Stonewall Inn. And this was followed about a decade later, 1981, with the outbreak of GRIDS. Now, GRIDS is what they called what we now call HIV, AIDS. It was gay-related immune deficiency sickness. Later, for political reasons, under the aggressive demands of homosexuals, it was dubbed HIV/AIDS. I became concerned about how this disease was spread and so did a deep dive research project into that matter or that question. During this research, I learned, sadly, that a wide variety of diseases were associated with homosexual behavior. Some that are unique to that population or pretty well restricted to it, and others greatly exacerbated by that behavior. The picture that emerged was deeply distressing. It was as if nature itself was rising up in condemnation against this behavior. It made me think of Romans 1:27. I quoted it earlier. It says this behavior triggers the revulsion of the Creator as an abomination to Him and the rebuke of nature. And here's the point. Any culture that can willingly embrace this unnatural behavior provokes our Creator and invites nature's rebuke. It is unnatural, and it's a transgression of God's law. Transgression of divine law opens the door to evil. And we are flooded with evil in our land today. It's pouring in through this and many other transgressions. And the thing about evil is that it does not touch only the guilty. It touches the innocent also. Furthermore, it corrupts the soul. See this mother holding her child in her lap at a tranny show where men dress as women, gyrate suggestively, and behave unseemly right in front of little children who are encouraged to place dollars in their pants and things like this. It's just so vile. The sort of thing wicked adults do for entertainment, something even one of their own, that is a homosexual, a practicing homosexual, said, this is not appropriate. He rebuked these foolish parents who take their children to such an event, rebuking their perverse conscience, saying they would not think of taking their child to a strip bar and encouraging them to participate in the show, but they will do it at a gay bar or a venue allowing for this sort of display. Sick, wicked, and evil-loving people. They drink in their own shame. But it touches the innocent children and perverts and destroys their lives. You see, it's not enough for their own soul to embrace such perversity. They have to really, literally force it upon their children. And we live in a society today where Child Protective Services would take a child from her home if that child's parents object to her being recruited by school teachers and pressured by other school personnel to hate the gender God made her and encourage her to desire to be a man instead? But the same child protective services would never dream of bothering a parent who takes their small child to a perverse display of homosexual activity. So we've allowed murdering babies in the wombs of their mothers since 1973, an evil that's come upon and hurting our children, feeding our children to Moloch. And now we're feeding our children to Baphomet, the Judas goat, the gender and species blended male-female man-animal homage to Alexander, the son of Satan, the prince of this world, by whom he once gathered all the kingdoms under his power. Having lost his kingdom to Jesus, the Christ of God, who cast out this prince of the world and banished him so that now he is prince of the power of the air, who now works in this world by the spirit of Antichrist through the children of disobedience, so that the ragers, I mean those who hate even the idea of Christ ruling the earth or of Christians having any part in it, sends his Judas goats into the world to lead the sheep to slaughter. That's what a Judas goat is used to do, you see? But these goats cannot lead the chief shepherd's sheep. Why? Because they hear only his voice and follow him. But the lost sheep are easily duped, and they giggle at the gyrations of the Judas goats. They snicker at their perversities and unnatural behaviors that defy nature and nature's God. Fascinated by their open defiance to the chief shepherd, they carry even their own children to present them, as it were, sacrifices to these wicked and evil satanic gods, spoiling their innocence and their human dignity, distorting their natural instincts, damaging their soul's conscience, making them food for the roaring lion who seeks to devour them. To conclude this segment, which is intended to prepare you for a proper discussion of whether this is a time to call for a convention of states, well, first understand that only a very small minority actually embrace this nonsense going on right now. The magnifying glass of corporate media, including Fox, by the way, make it appear larger than it is. Only a bit over 3% of the population practices homosexual behavior. A significantly smaller percentage go into the tranny movement, and only a handful of very perverse straights endorse the outlandish behavior put on display right now. However, there are a great many cowards today, and a great many that are following Satan's Judas goats, lost sheep, following those Judas goats to their own destruction because they want to be popular, in with the in crowd, hip, cool, fashionable, moving with the trend. Not realizing the trend is actually a fabrication of Satan-controlled media. What would the spirit of Antichrist do with an opportunity to rewrite the Constitution? Hold on to the break, my dear friends. I'll be right back.
The spirit of Antichrist is rising. Christians are the most persecuted group in the world today. And Antichrist sentiment is rising in America, too. But remember, when the enemy comes in like a flood, the spirit of the Lord raises a banner against him. The spirit of Jesus Christ in us is greater than the spirit of Antichrist in the world. But believers don't understand the ways of the kingdom of God. Jerry's new book teaches you how to wrestle against the principalities and powers that have risen against Christ in America today. Get God's War, Why Christians Should Rule the World. Go to godswar2020.com. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Hello, welcome back. I'm Dr. Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps, the church belfry arch, singling the enemies on the march, an enemy that is right now stealing from us our liberties. There is growing interest in agitating for the states to invoke Article 5 of our Constitution that provides a way for the people to, essentially, fire the Congress, at least to overrule it, and make amendments to the Constitution without their involvement or interference. That will ostensibly force government to become once again of, by, and for the people. It's a way for us to exercise our right to revolution without having to take up arms. Now, we know that Congress will never impose term limits on itself. I agree with DeMint. No one should be in Congress for 20 or 30 years. It's not supposed to be a career. We now know Congress will never limit their power to tax and spend us into oblivion. We know that Congress will never give up their ability to provide exemptions to themselves from the laws it passes on we the people. You know, like the Pelosi loophole, allowing her family to exploit insider trading opportunities. And that little dance they did when they exempted themselves from Obamacare. Article 5 was written for such a time as this, when the people are being oppressed by bloated government intrusion into virtually every facet of our lives. But is this the time to use it? Let's talk about that, or at least get the conversation started. Here's a resource to help you get started. Here footnoted in my notes. Let's begin by pulling out my pocket constitution and reading Article 5. Quote, "The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or, on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which, in either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes, as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions in three-fourths thereof, as the one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. Provided that no amendment which may be made prior to the year 1808 shall in any manner affect the first and fourth clauses in the ninth section of the first article, and that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate." There are interesting things we can discuss with regard to that last clause, but it's not relevant since we are well beyond 1808. So for the purpose of the show, we'll focus on the provisions made here for amending the Constitution, and the part we are particularly interested in is the provision allowing the people to bypass Congress and call for a convention of states to introduce amendments. Sometimes this is called a constitutional convention, and often in discussion it's abbreviated as CONCON. Many calling for the states to invoke Article 5 are sensitive to the concerns some have raised that a constitutional convention would allow for the possibility that the entire Constitution could be rewritten and thereby totally destroyed. So they prefer to refer to this as a convention of states. But that's a mere dodge. The fact is, a constitutional convention is the perfect way to characterize this. Why? Because first, it is an action that's afforded to us by our founders in the Constitution. So it is constitutional on that ground. And second, it is about amending the Constitution, which does make it a constitutional convention. And third, the concern is a legitimate one, recognized as valid by none other than Justice Antonin Scalia. However, Scalia also said he thought the danger of that happening was minimal and that the risk would be reasonable in certain circumstances. And that is because while it requires two-thirds of the states to trigger Article 5, whatever amendments are passed by the convention thereby called, must be ratified by three-fourths of the state legislatures or state conventions. Now, what that means is it takes 34 states to invoke Article 5 and 38 states to ratify whatever amendments are passed in the convention. We're going to look more closely at the ratification clause in just a moment, but here's how this would look. The legislatures of at least 34 states would have to independently call for a convention of states. And right away, we have one of the hurdles that we face getting, well, anything done in the current environment. Even though the Constitution does not stipulate the states must all apply for a convention for the same reasons or to address the same concerns, that is what those who have interpreted it have decided must be done. So right off the starting line, we have a kind of bar here, a barrier, a Congress and judiciary. The executive is not part of this whole proceeding, but the Congress and judicial branches, jealous of protecting their power over the people, impose a kind of unconstitutional barrier by asserting 34 states must agree on what topics they want addressed at this convention. Now, this is the reason we have had as many as 41 states call for a convention and over 475 applications from one or more of these states have been sent to Congress. But Congress, under the protection of judicial opinion, has refused to invoke Article 5. Now, I see nothing in the Constitution that requires the 34 states to apply for a convention in the same or equivalent language, or for the same or equivalent reasons or concerns. They made that up. It's not in the language. You see, to these wicked rulers, it does not matter what the Constitution says or does not say. What matters is who has the power to decide what it means. But there's a caveat here. To explain how they get away with this, consider. There is, as Scalia himself observed, a possibility that triggering a convention of states could, in fact, lead to a rewriting of the entire Constitution, if it was open-ended. Even writing away our First and Second Amendments could theoretically happen. He did not think it was a likely concern because it does not seem likely that the necessary 38 states to ratify would be willing to ratify any amendment so radical as one that would erase our First through Tenth Amendments, let's say. But I beg you to pause and consider the political environment we are in right now. Does anyone doubt that is exactly what use would be made of a convention of states where the agenda was not expressly limited? And you see, that's the problem. Some, I think actually most of the states that have applied for invocation of Article 5 have stipulated limited concerns and carefully constrained their delegates to address only those concerns. And that is because they don't want an open forum to rewrite the Constitution. This is how the Congress has been able to refuse a call for a convention of states to date, by asserting there are not enough states in agreement about what it is they want to address. But to date, there are 31 qualifying applications. 3 more will trigger Article 5. But that's not the only hurdle we face. Then comes the selection of delegates. Will the state legislatures appoint citizen delegates, or will the states vote on citizen delegates? If the delegates are bound to act merely as proxy to the state legislature, there's little point in voting for citizen delegates. So while it removes the power from our Congress and invests this power in the hands of state legislatures, you see what a situation we have in California. Now, so far, there are more red than blue states. And no matter how many delegates are sent, each state gets only one vote. So it is hopeful that the amendments passed would be good ones and would be truly needed to straighten out this mess. Now, here they are. First, term limits. Second, tax limits. Third, spending limits. Fourth, borrowing limits. Fifth, barring Congress from exempting itself from laws they pass on citizens like insider trading. Sorry, Pelosi and your drunkard family. Or how they exempted themselves from Obamacare. Those are two of many examples that could be cited. So suppose these get passed out of convention and sent to the states for ratification. Another hurdle. The ratification provision offers two paths. State legislatures may ratify the amendments or conventions called by the states for this purpose. The Congress decides which mode will be used. This could get stalled in Congress forever. Filibusters or procedural devices could be used to keep the item from a vote on the floor. All sorts of wicked machinations by these wicked people could be and almost certainly would be used by these jackals. This second procedure, ratification by a convention of delegates, was used, by the way, to pass the 21st Amendment, which repealed the 18th. And this was to allow legislatures political cover from blowback over this action. Now, I'll examine this action later as an example of how you will not eliminate political intrigue and its machinations in the invocation of Article 5. In fact, in our environment especially, you will agitate these wicked ones into egregious efforts to use this as an opportunity to take away our liberties. Now, I'm not saying we should not invoke it for fear of what liberals or progressives will attempt to do with it. No, not at all. Truth is, we are at a point right now, if we don't do something, we are headed straight into a breakup of the Union and or a second Revolutionary War. Article 5 is certainly preferred to open war in our streets. It provides for the people to exercise their right of revolution acknowledged in our Constitution and Declaration without the necessity of taking up arms. But you had better be prepared for serious political warfare, and spiritual warfare for sure, because as much as I admire Jim DeMint, his statement that, quote, this should not be a partisan left-right Democrat-Republican issue. This should be a who controls your life issue, you or the government, end quote. I'm afraid the statement is terribly naive. Everything is a right versus left issue today. Everything is about political power of this or that party. Everything is about deep state versus the people. And one side will make certain this issue will be cast as a them versus us fight to the mattresses. Now, I've got more to say on this. We will kick it around during tonight's live visit. For now, let me conclude by explaining what is ultimately what makes all of this virtually a non-starter. Until we restore election integrity, none of this matters. So long as those devils can steal our elections, there's absolutely no recourse left. Please, I beg you, hear me now. It's ballots or bullets. One side knows that, and they've taken our ballots, daring us to turn to our bullets. Don't fall into that trap. Demand these machines be removed from our elections, and the laws governing our elections are obeyed and are appropriate. Voter ID is a non, it's just a no-brainer. Restore election integrity. And then, and I'll explain more on this later, but then will be the right time to move on Article 5. Of course, action can be done on both fronts at the same time. And by this, restoring election integrity and invoking Article 5, we can hope to bring this government back under the people. And hopefully, the people will, 2 Chronicles 7:14, our way back under God. I've lit the lamps in the church belfry arch. You let me know you see they're on. Email me by going to our website, brainmassage.net. That's brainmassage, one word, lowercase, you get it, .net. Find the contact button, send me an email. You can leave a message for me on our listener response hotline at 1-805-314-2114. God bless you. God bless America. And I'll see you in church.
Every day, we see proof of the wisdom of our founders. We've acknowledged the right of unbelievers to make their own choice for or against Christ. But see how they're not content that we should make room for their rebellion? Daily, they attempt to force us to join them in it. They would force us to teach our children the life-threatening lifestyle of the sodomites. They force us to fund the atrocity of baby murder. We have acknowledged it's their choice to receive or rebel against Christ, but they have used that freedom to take away our liberties. The battle for America is on. The spirit of Antichrist has risen in our land against the spirit of Jesus Christ. What side are you on? Encounter God. The word encounter means to meet, to experience, to come face to face with, to confront. The greatest life-changing encounter in any life will be those encounters with God that make a difference. Perhaps it's been a while since you've experienced God in a vital, meaningful encounter. Renew your experience of God with a fresh encounter this year that will impact your life for spiritual growth. Or perhaps you've never experienced God and He doesn't seem real to you. You can encounter God in 2015. And when you do, you'll know that God is real. Lighthouse Baptist Church, 1310 West Bedarabia Road, Santa Maria. Go to godswar2020.com.